Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. Brought to you by Poker Stars, Reactor Watches, the Poker Players Alliance, and All In Apparel. Shut up and put your money
where your mouth is. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. You
got to know. Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
Jackpot. Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Yes, this is our new broadcast home for The Final Table. This is the poker room of Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel. I'm Paul Harrah's, but Dennis Phillips is not here today. Instead, we start our new year and our new home with Dennis on the road, or I actually should say on the beach. He joins us from the Atlantis Casino Resort in the Bahamas, where he's lined up for the Poker Stars Caribbean Adventure. Hi, Dennis.
I'm not on the beach, but, you know, I can see the beach.
Now, this is something I bugged you about all year last year. You went to all these different exotic places in the Caribbean and Latin America and all over the place, and not once did you go anywhere near the water. You told me you touched the sand once, but you went nowhere near the water. Was it your New Year's resolution this year to try to at least get near the water?
Supposedly tomorrow they're having a photo shoot of me going down a water slide. That should be real interesting.
Look out below.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, talk about cannonballing. I've been working for years to get to be a good cannonballer. Lots of good restaurants.
So tell us about the PCA. I know it's one of the biggest events of the Poker Stars year, and, man, I wish I was there with you. Tell us about the event.
Oh, it's just awesome down here. The main event is actually going on right now, day one of it. I'm in the main event right now. I took a little break to come over here to talk to you guys. It's over 1,100 qualifiers from about 50 countries are down here, plus another 300 or 400 people that signed up. It's a massive field. First place is probably going to be close to $2 million on it. And Poker Stars takes care of its people. I'm telling you, down here is awesome. This is first rate the whole way around. It's at the Atlantis in the Bahamas. Phenomenal resort. Anything you could ever ask for is here. And if you can't have fun down here, you got a problem.
Did everybody who got into the main event, did they all have to qualify on Poker Stars, or were people buying in for cash as well?
No, that's the combination. There's probably a little over 1,100 of them that qualified online, and then the others bought in directly into it. So we've got between 1,400 and 1,500. It's not a full count yet because we have day 1B tomorrow, but it's going to be somewhere in that neighborhood. And like I said, there's over 50 countries represented here. It's a truly international match. It's a monster is what it is.
Tell me some of the people you've run into. I know you just got there on Sunday evening, so it's only been a day and a half. Tell me who you've seen.
Oh, my gosh. Everybody from Boris Becker to Montel Williams to all of the Poker Stars pros. Daniel's here. Greg's here. Chris is here. We've got Gavin Griffin that's going to be joining us here in a few minutes. Vanessa is here. Chad's here. I mean, I could just go on and on. There is probably, of the 80 team members worldwide, there's probably 60 of them. It's that many of them.
And what about those people who were on the Poker Stars Million Dollar Challenge, the TV show on Fox, who got to play against Daniel? I think if they got to the first level, the first thing they could win was a trip to the Bahamas. Was that for this?
Yes, it is. That's exactly it. This is the premier event for Poker Stars. This is the thing that they really pull out all the stops on. And all the guys from the Million Dollar Challenge are down here, both the contestants and the pros on it. I have not met them yet. Some of them are coming in tonight. There's going to be a nice press meeting and that, a couple of nice parties Poker Stars is throwing I get to go to. I'm telling you, it's unbelievable. I've not met the priest. I did meet the firefighter that won it while I was out in L.A., and I met one of the friends of the gentleman, the priest. So I'm really looking forward to seeing these guys. I should be able to meet them tomorrow.
You said the firefighter, but you mean the ex-cop, the guy from the NYPD.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, absolutely.
9/11 first responder.
Yeah, I actually met him the morning before he went to do his first sit down with the pros, and he was nervous and all this. He was actually an alternate, but then got in. So his is really a kind of a Cinderella story because he was questionable if he was going to get in, and then he had to beat all the odds to beat the other people to get the gun. Daniel heads up, and then he had to beat Daniel. So it's pretty awesome, I'll tell you.
This main event that is a $10,000 buy-in event, you got two day ones, day 1A today and 1B tomorrow. How many days is it? I mean, will this tournament go through the weekend?
Yes. This is going to last down here for about 11 days. There's a total of almost 50 other tournaments on this. If you want to play Paducah, if you want to play Deuce of Seven Triple Draw, if you want to play Omaha, if you want to play Raz, there's a game down here for you and some great cash games, too, going on. It's everything you could ever want. It's a great resort. It's great poker. It's everything. So,
okay, well, I'm 100% jealous now. I was only 99% jealous when we started the show. Now I'm 100% jealous. Hey, hey, look who sat down next to me here at table two at Harrah's here in St. Louis. It's our friend and I believe the longest running anchorman in St. Louis TV, Larry Connors.
That's just another way to say I'm old.
Peter. Hey, Larry, with me.
Yeah. Well, Dennis, I'll tell you what, today for this program, I wore my Peter's Island hat from the BVI, so that's as close as I can get to the Caribbean today.
Have you ever been to that resort, Larry?
I have. Atlanta's very good. It's always a good poker room. I have not had a chance to participate in the Poker Stars event. Maybe next year.
Maybe next year you and I will qualify. You know what? You know what? Next year you and I will go, and,
let's do
and
that.
Dennis will stay here.
Let's leave him here.
Maybe we ought to get another group together, like what went to Vegas, and we'll do it that way.
That would be
blast. That'd be pretty awesome, wouldn't it?
Blast. It would be.
That would be very nice. For those of you who are listening, Larry, of course, the anchorman on KMOV Channel 4 here in St. Louis, and also a poker player. We run into you all the time. You're actually in here playing today, right?
I am. Yeah, playing a little bit. You know, that bad beat here is $410,000 at Harrah's. So
yeah.
I'm waiting for you. Why not sit out 1-2 and see if I don't get lucky?
Yeah. We have a deal, right?
Yeah,
hit it.
You know, I do have four different tables covered where I'm giving 5% on three of the guys, where if I hit, they get 5% of my hand. If they hit, I get 5% of theirs. And then another one's just straight $5,000. So, you know, you got to spread your chances out.
Wait a minute. You're swapping percentages on the bad beat.
Yeah, well, it's another way to get some money in, right, Dennis? I mean,
absolutely.
What are the odds, hitting my table or hitting one of the other four? I increase my chances.
That's bad. I'd never heard of that.
Yeah.
I didn't know anybody else was doing that.
Yeah, well, I walk in and they say, you with me today, you got somebody else. So I've got four different players locked up, three of them at 5% apiece. If I can't do much more, I'd end up having to write a check if I win the bad beat.
The bad beat here at Harrah's St. Louis is, as Larry said, it's over $400,000 now.
$410,000.
The way it works is, if you're involved in a hand and you take a bad beat with quads or better and you're beaten by quads or better, you get half of that jackpot.
The guy that beats you gets 50% of it.
No, you get 50%. The other guy gets 25%.
Well, the guy that gets – that's correct. That's correct.
And then
the 25% is split with the table. And right now, table share of a full table is around $13,000 or better.
$13,000 just for sitting there and watching two
that's
other
right.
guys bet it up.
That's right.
Yeah. Have you ever been in a bad beat?
No, but I've been in this room a couple times when they've had it.
Yeah.
Once I was at a tournament, and I was like, Prince, I should have been playing the cash today. Another time, it happened early in the morning, and again, nearby. Close as I came, I was down at Harrah's in New Orleans some months ago. And our table busted in the middle of the morning because we were short. They moved us to two tables. The table I did not go to hit the bad beat in three hands. So.
Oh, man.
But it's a different hand out there. His ace is full, so it gets busted pretty quick.
Oh, yeah,
that's
that
around
60
grand. Still pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Dennis, have you ever been in a bad beat?
I mean, I have not.
I've
sat in the room
bad.
When a number of happened. In fact, I had one interesting. A friend of mine sat down at that in an empty chair. He sat down at the table. I said, you want to understand? He said, no, I'll wait one. He was still unracking his chips. They built the bad beat without him in it.
Wow.
They gave him a little something.
Like
something,
the other guys around the table said, well, if you'd have come in, though, it would have changed everything. We would not have had the bad beat. So they all turned around and gave him, like, $1,200 apiece. Everybody at the table
good.
Did to make up for it.
Very nice.
Now, you know, they had another one at a casino I was at where a husband and wife were at the same table. The husband had gone to the restroom. Another guy had walked away. Another guy was at the table, but he was on his phone. He didn't take his hand. He just waved it away when they dealt it to him. So he didn't put his phone down and take possession. You have to take control of your hand. If he'd put his phone down, looked at his cards, and then shoved them, it'd been fine. They hit the bad beat. Of course, the husband got part of it because his wife won. The guy that's away from the table, they gave him a little bit. The guy that just ignored the hand got nothing. They, you know, the other players said, "We're not giving you anything."
He didn't even bother looking at his hand.
That's cold. And here's what's amazing about that. If it was a full ring game of 10 people, and three of them aren't there.
That's right.
So now you take out the winner and the guy who got the bad beat, and now you got five people into a table share. It's unbelievable.
One guy gets his table share, and he gets some from his wife. Well, maybe not.
Wow. That's amazing. I've gotten one bad beat in my life 10 years ago at another casino, the president downtown, when they had a poker room there, and we used to get some pretty good 20-40 games going on a Friday night. I was on the list waiting to play, and I said, all right, I'll sit down on the 4-8 game, 4-8 limit game.
Yeah.
And after about 5 minutes, it hit, and my table share was $880.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't get paid for 2.5 hours because, you know, they got to go, surveillance has got to go check it out and all of that. And, I mean, I'd been in the 2040 game for 2 hours before they came over and said, okay, here are your chips. Congratulations.
I have played online and been a part of a bad beat in the sense that table stakes, if you're playing like table stakes, it would suddenly pop up that I had $800 going to my account because I was playing a like table stakes and it's hit on another table.
Mm-hmm.
And so they spread it around other players.
Yeah.
That's as close as I've been.
I like those as well. Dennis, we've got a listener by the name of Mike who's on the phone who has a question for you here. Mike, welcome to the final table.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Is Larry Connor still with you?
Yes, he is. Right here.
I am a former Hank Tepe social studies student in the late 80s. How you doing?
A what social student?
Hank Tepe.
Oh, Hank Tepe. Who's that?
You tell him, Mike.
Yeah, Hank Tepe is Mr. Connor's brother.
Oh.
No.
He's not?
It's just a good story that goes around from time to time.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. I have no idea who he is. No.
So
I've heard that story
from time to time.
I do hear it, but I've never met the guy, and I'm sorry if I'm just bringing disrespect to his name.
That was my 6 degrees to fame right there. I have nothing now.
I think you're 20 degrees now.
Sorry, Mike.
Okay. Falling.
Well,
okay, Mike.
Questions for Mr. Phillips. Have you ever gone through one of those times where you raise preflop, and then seemingly it doesn't matter if the other player has a joker in the instructions. He's going to draw out on you. During those periods of time, do you stay away? Do you play through it? I mean, I'm so frustrated right now.
Now, that's a good question, Dennis.
And every player gets into it, let me tell you, at a time where he just seems, no matter what the out that needs to beat you is, it shows up on the river. Or no matter when you finally catch a hand, the jacks, the guy to your left, then immediately gets the queens. It's extremely frustrating. That's where the true patience and your true discipline comes out. You've got to keep playing your hands, you've got to keep playing, and you know the percentages are there. You know if you keep playing smart, if you keep playing the hands the right way, that you will eventually be all right. But it can be so frustrating. I've been there, every good poker player has been there.
You know, Mike, we're going to have Joe, the poker coach McGowan, join us here in a couple of minutes, and we can talk a little bit about that with him as well, what you do during some downtimes and how it can affect your play. So we appreciate the call, Mike. Dennis is live from the Bahamas, where he's at the PokerStars Caribbean Adventure. Larry Connors is here with me at our new St. Louis broadcast home, Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel. I'm Paul Harris. This is the final table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. And this opening portion of our show is brought to you by PokerStars.net, the website where you can play against pros like Dennis.
Oh, absolutely, guys. You are missing it. If you don't play on PokerStars, you need to, because that's the only way you're going to qualify to get down here. Let me tell you something. It is awesome down here on this thing. In fact, I just got joined by a friend of mine right here. How you doing, my guy?
Sorry about that.
Yeah, PokerStars, guys. You've got to go to PokerStars. You've got to play there. That's how you can get to the PCA. That's how you can be here standing right next to me. That's how you can have some of this fun. I'm telling you guys, it's unbelievable. All right. And by the way, the guy who just gave me the bear hug was Nelly.
Oh, really?
Anyhow, you really. So, unbelievable. He's down here. He's going to be playing. And he's a pretty good player, too, guys. Give him his credit.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
sorry about
is.
That
it's
interruption.
Getting hot
but
in here.
When you get a bear hug from Nelly, it kind of takes your distraction.
All right. We'll take a break and come back in just a moment. This is the final table from the Bahamas and from St. Louis. Podcast on thechipleader.com and live on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
Dennis Phillips has flown over 100,000 miles this year to play poker tournaments on three continents. But he always comes back to St. Louis to talk about the game. Here he is at the final table with Paul Harris from Harris St. Louis Casino and Hotel on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Okay. Dennis is doing his portion of the show today from the Bahamas, where he's at the Atlantis Resort, the home of the PokerStars Caribbean Adventure. The main event actually got underway a couple of hours ago, and he's in it right now. And I guess you're getting blinded off, huh?
I am.
Dennis, you there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay. I was just asking you, are you getting blinded off while we're doing the show?
Yeah, I am a little bit, but I chipped up a little bit. Started with 30,000. I got about 37. So I can afford to miss a couple of hands.
Oh, okay, well, that's nice. Let's bring in the poker coach, Joe McGowan. Joe, welcome to our new broadcast home, Harris St. Louis.
Oh, thank you, Paul. Hey, Dennis.
Hey, how's it going, Joe?
Going good, buddy.
Hey, before the break, Joe, we got a call from a listener named Mike who is going through a cold streak right now. And, you know, what do you do when you're in a situation like that? What advice could you give him?
Well, I mean, cold streaks are, of course, the non-fun part of poker. And pretty much almost every player goes through it at one point or another. And they're really hard to deal with. You know, you go on a cold streak, you just have to keep trying to play your best and not play timid. A lot of players, when they get in a cold streak or they've been running bad or taking some bad beats, they may tend to overplay their hands, and they're afraid of a turn card that will come or a river card that will come, and they don't get enough value out of their hands. So just, you know, keep something simple like that in mind, to where you still want to play good poker and you still want to play right. The thing you want to be aware of is you also don't want to play tilty, to where, you know, recently on the Poker After Dark, it was amazing to me that even those guys, the top players in the world, when they did those 100,000 coin flips,
yep,
they were all talking about how great it would be for the game, because people play bad when they get stuck and it will loosen it up and people will start playing a little tilty. Even the best players in the game would play that way, and I think they did, you know. So, you know, cold streaks, you just got to try to ride it out and continue to play good poker and be careful that you don't play tilty poker. So you just got to ride it out.
And, in fact, on those episodes of Poker After Dark a couple of weeks ago where they were playing the cash game, Phil Hellmuth didn't take part in those flips, and he kept, you know, playing very nitty. He wasn't getting involved in a lot of hands, and then he did get involved in a hand where I think he flopped a set and somebody else either flopped or turned a straight, and he lost a big stack. And you could actually see him go on tilt on TV because he started playing hands that he never would play. He'd raise, and people would take advantage of him and re-raise him. And I mean, it was a classic example of a guy who's a pretty good poker player who got caught up in the same thing that all of us do.
Yeah, absolutely, Paul. As a matter of fact, he had pocket tens and flopped top set of tens, and Phil Ivey was the original raiser in a six-handed game with 6-8. I remember the hand very well, and the flop, you know, was 10 high, but Phil flopped the low end of the straight, of course, with both cards playing. And all the money went in on the turn, and the board didn't pair. And then, you know, Phil Hellmuth likes to lay bad odds on getting insurance, reverse insurance, and the whole table was picking on him, and Danny Negreanu was double-booking him, and he didn't even get the insurance down, the poor guy. No one would give him the insurance, and they just ran it out, and a blank came on the river. The board didn't pair for him, and it was a massive cooler. And shortly after that, he got involved in a pot, and kind of either bluffed off some money or made a horrible call and lost, you know, tilted off some money. So you're absolutely right. It happens. But as for that person, I think you said it was Mike, you know, it's a tough, non-fun part of poker. But, you know, sometimes you just got to get up and walk away from the table or say, you know what, I think I'm going to – I've been around some great players, and they've been in big situations, cash games, and, like, you know, I got up, I'm leaving – I felt I was going to do something stupid. So, I mean, that's discipline. You can kind of sometimes tell when you think your mindset isn't right and you shouldn't be playing. And I've gone places to go play poker, but I didn't quite sleep well enough, or something's bothering me with my business that I have, or something with my family, or who knows what. I won't play because I know my head isn't straight and I'm not going to be as much of a favorite as I would like, and I just don't have my full, you know, game with me. So I choose sometimes not even to play at all if I don't feel I'm going to have my A game, you know, that I would need to hopefully be a winning player.
Dennis, have you been in situations like that, either in cash games or in tournaments, where you know you took a bad beat here, some guy hit a two-outer, or the, you know, every time somebody else was on a flush draw, they always hit it, and when you were on a flush draw or a straight draw, you never hit it, and after a while, does that get to you mentally, and what do you do about it?
Oh, it absolutely can. Believe me, I'm not quite as disciplined as Joe, unfortunately. If I'm somewhere, I'm going to probably go ahead and play the tournament or play the games and that. I should be more disciplined. Joe brings up a very valid point. You need to know yourself. You need to know your mood, the whole bit. I do sometimes, so I get a little frustrated, because everybody can go on a little, at least a semi-tilt at a minimum. But what you do then is I get up and I go eat lunch at that time. You know, take 45 minutes to leave the table and go do that maybe. Or, I don't know, go play blackjack for a while. You know, see if you can beat up the cards there, change things up a little bit. So you get yourself back to where your mind's in the right mindset, where you're going to be playing your A-game poker, and you sit back down and you go again.
Joe mentioned poker.
And by the way, that was Dennis's thought, not mine, on going to play the blackjack. Just want to make that clear.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I used to have a problem not with the blackjack table, but with the craps table. You know, I'd be having a bad day in the poker room, and I think, you know what, I'll go win some money back at the craps table and just dig myself a bigger hole there. So that was really healthy for me in the long run. Thank goodness I kind of plugged that leak a little bit. But you mentioned Poker After Dark, Joe. Dennis, we now have the dates for your appearances on both Poker After Dark and High Stakes Poker.
Ooh, sweet. Okay.
You will be on the cash game week of Poker After Dark the week of March 15th. Or March 22nd. We're not sure which one it's going to be, but it is the one where it starts out with Chris Ferguson and Phil Hellmuth and Antonio Sfondiari and Brandon Adams and Todd Brunson and Mike Mattisau. And as you told us the story on the air a couple of weeks ago, somebody got way tilted and left. You can guess which one of those six it probably was. I think you probably have two candidates there. but one of them walked out, and you got a chance to go in for, what was it, a $50,000 buy-in?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Okay.
Well, it's minimum of 50. You sit down with anywhere from 50 to 100 usually on it.
Okay.
So I sit down with 50 and then put another 20 on the table when I kind of counted everybody else's money, see where I was at.
So that'll be airing either the week of March 15th or March 22nd. And also, we know that you went out to do high-stakes poker right after the main event of the World Series this year, and you sat down with Tom Dwan and Phil Ivey and Daniel and Doyle, and I don't remember who else was at the table, but that will be also in March. You're not going to be on the first shows that air in February. The new season, High Stakes Poker Season 6, begins on February 14th. You're going to be on shows 6, 7, and 8, and I got this directly from Maury Eskandani, the executive producer, and his staff. Just last night, you'll be on shows 6, 7, and 8, which will air March 21st, March 28th, and April 4th. So,
ooh, okay, cool.
So we've got a couple of months, and as we get closer, I know you really can't tell us about any specific hands in there, but maybe we can get Maury on the show sometime in February or March and talk a little bit about the experience of Dennis Phillips on high-stakes poker. For now, we've got to take a break, and then when we come back, we've got a whole bunch of great listener email to get to, plus some other poker news as well. Dennis Phillips is live from the PokerStars Caribbean Adventure, the PCA, one of their biggest events of the year, and maybe announcing new events soon. We'll tell you about that when we come back. I'm Paul Harris at our new broadcast home, Harris St. Louis Casino and Hotel. We're live from the Poker Room on 5-9 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
Dennis Phillips has flown over 100,000 miles this year to play poker tournaments on three continents. But he always comes back to St. Louis to talk about the game. Here he is at the final table with Paul Harris from Harris St. Louis Casino and Hotel on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Yeah, we're at Harris St. Louis, the new home of the final table and the home of a brand new circuit event for the World Series of Poker. The first 2 weeks of April, this place will be absolutely hopping as hundreds of poker players descend on St. Louis to play in the first ever St. Louis area World Series of Poker circuit event. The satellites will begin on April 1st. The first event is going to be on April 2nd. There will be no limit hold'em events every day for 2 weeks at noon leading up to the big $5,000 buy-in championship event. There'll also be a $1,500 event, a $1,000 event. They've got some $500 and $400 and $300 events here as well. And even more, they've got Omaha. There's a PLO event. There's a pot limit Omaha 8 or better. There's limit Omaha 8 or better. I think there's even a limit hold'em event in here and a horse event and a six-handed no-limit event. And it'll be three different tournaments going on every single day leading up to that championship event on April 13th. This is going to be huge for poker in St. Louis, and both Dennis and I are looking forward to being here, and I think we'll probably both be living here for about 2 weeks, don't you think?
I pretty much guarantee we're going to be living there, that's for sure. I don't know about you, but I intend to not sleep for 2 weeks.
You can come in here and take your shot at the ring. You don't get a bracelet at a circuit event. You get a ring, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. You could also win a seat to the World Series of Poker main event this summer. And if you want details, you go to harrisstlouis.com, get information, or just come in here to the poker room and play some live poker here in town where Dennis and I play quite often. And they've got tournaments going on here 7 days a week already. It's Harris St. Louis, the new home of the Final Table, and we're happy to be here and really looking forward to this event later on this spring. Now, Joe, the poker coach McGowan, is joining us while Dennis is in the Bahamas and I'm in St. Louis. He's in Southern California, where I'm guessing things are a little bit warmer than the 5 degrees I woke up to today. You both are, you know, wherever you are, it's a lot warmer than here. Before we talk about anything else, I want to ask you, speaking of tournaments, about a move made by the Bellagio for their five-star World Poker Classic, which runs from March 30th to April 24th. Every event, every one of the preliminary events, is going to be a rebuy tournament. 24 different events, 16 no-limit hold'em, 6 super satellites, and 2 pot limit Omaha events will all be rebuys. Instead of going with $2,000 and $3,000 and $5,000 events, they're all going to be 1K buy-ins with rebuys available. I'm going to ask you guys what you think about that. Dennis, starting with you, do you like rebuy tournaments?
Actually, a lot of times I do like rebuy tournaments. I like it because of the added value. If you can be one of those people that doesn't have to rebuy on it, it adds extra money into the pot and such. But that being said, you have to play them different. I guarantee on these rebuys, there's a lot of people who think they have to chip up, that are going to be more aggressive, that are more likely to throw the chips out there on a flush draw or something. So, you know, it's beware, but I do like the rebuys for that reason, and I do think a good player can have an advantage in them because he doesn't have to do the rebuys a lot of others do. So we'll see what happens, but, yeah, I do like rebuys.
Joe, what about you?
Well, that's the first I ever heard of that, Paul. I'm quite surprised, you know, because the World Series did away with the rebuys because they felt that, you know, if someone like Daniel Negreanu was rebuying in 26 times, and then people would just go all in dark that could afford it against each other, and someone could chip up, and then when the rebuys were over, you know, at least one of the two had some chips and a fair chance to run deep in the tournament. But, I mean, thinking about it quickly, they must be doing it because last year, Dennis and I were out at the Bellagio, and we took a stroll over to the Bellagio to sign up for the 5K, and it was good news, bad news. I was going to call my wife and say, honey, I made the final table. You know, there was like 6 people signed up. You know?
That's right.
As soon as you, what's that?
No, you're absolutely right. In fact, at the Five Diamond recently, they had some events where they weren't getting a lot of people signing up. And last year when they did this World Poker Classic, they had a 5K event with, I think, like 27 people in it. So, I mean, I made the final 27. It was also the first 27.
Right. Now, there were a couple that I think ended up with only like 18 or even 13 or so, something unbelievable at the time. It was just really when the crunch was happening. But it does. I just came back from Vegas last night, as a matter of fact. I was just there went out to do some things, and saw the city center, by the way. Quite a sight for those of you that haven't seen it. Really amazing. I mean, just a really cool building, something to see. Bellagio was packed. City center was busy, and there was definitely some activity out there. So that was kind of cool to see. But with this rebuy, that's interesting, and it's probably something that I think will be good because people can afford the $1,000 buy-in likely, and then once you're in it, you may tend to build up the prize pool. So it's probably a good move for what's going on, you know, with the economy and everything and last year. So I guess I like it.
Okay. By the way, the main event of the five-star World Poker Classic will not be a rebuy event. That's because the buy-in is the $25,000 for the World Poker Tour World Championship. You're not going to see a lot of 25K rebuys going on.
I'll let you put me into that one, Paul.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll put you in there. Sure. And we'll split the proceeds.
Okay.
All right, Dennis, I know you got to get back into your main event down there at the Bahamas, so we're going to let you go, and we'll hook up with you and maybe one of the other pros next week. You're going to be there for the next week and a half, right?
Yes, that's correct. Absolutely will be. We'll see what happens. Hopefully I'll still be playing in the main event, but, we'll see what happens.
Okay, well, before you go, say a word about our sponsor, Reactor Watches. I'm sure you have some of these pros down there asking you about the watch that you got on your arm, which is it's the Cardinals watch, right?
It is. It's got the cardinal red on the background of it. It's a gorgeous watch, and you're absolutely right. Down here, I played a sit-and-go with Victor Ramden and Barry and a couple of other guys, and the dealer had stopped dealing, actually, to look at the watch for a while. It was almost ridiculous on it. And I had a guy come up to me, you know, with a camera, and I thought he was going to take wanted an autograph or a picture with me or something. He wanted to take a picture of the watch. Okay? So, you know... It is an impressive one. The best thing about Reactor watches, though, are the durability that they have. You cannot destroy these watches. I'm telling you, this is the watch. You buy it, and you keep it for a lifetime. So it's an unbelievable watch. It's an extremely attractive watch, and I guarantee it's the watch I'll be wearing for years and years to come.
If you want to find out more about Reactor watches, you can go to Dennis's website, thechipleader.com, click on the sponsor link, and it'll take you right there. All right, Dennis, have a great time down there. Try to touch the water sometime this week, and I'll talk to you in a few days.
Good luck, Dennis.
All right. Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate that. And I'm going to head back in and see if I can catch some.
All right, good luck in the main event there. Dennis Phillips live from the Atlantis Resort in the Bahamas, where he's playing in the PCA $10,000 main event. All right, Joe, so is this you and me now? You want to do some listener email?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I like those. Sure.
Okay. Here's a listener named Mark in Mendon, Illinois, who writes about one of the hands that I would say we probably get more emails about this hand than any other. It's an ace-jack hand. People just have trouble playing it. I will admit that I have trouble playing it. You and I have talked about hands in the past with problems with ace-jack. So here's what Mark says. I was under the gun plus two. I had ace-jack offsuit. Had 1,300 in blinds. The blinds were 2,550. So he's playing in a tournament. He says, I'd been
1,300
patient.
1,300 in blinds or chips?
No, 1,300 in chips. I'm sorry.
Chips.
1,300
okay.
in chips, and the blinds were 2,550.
Right.
He says, I'd been patient, being card dead for the previous 30 minutes. The guy under the gun calls the big blind for 50. I call 50, even though I thought about raising it 200. And the small blind called 50. Everybody else was out. The flop came jack, eight, jack. So I flopped trips. The guy under the gun checks. I raise to $250. The small blind calls, and the under the gun guy folds. He says, at this point, I plan on going all in after the turn, even though I really wanted to shove after the flop, but I thought maybe I could get a bit more money out on the table. Now, before we go to the turn, what do you think of the hand so far, Joe?
Well... I guess just trying to think quick. I mean, if he had pocket aces, say, and the under-the-gun player limped, and now he has aces, and he says, you know what, I'm going to limp and hope that one of the players behind recognizes that the guy that limped under the gun has been doing that a lot with, you know, suited connectors and small pairs. He's been coming in under the gun a lot. I've been limping a lot. A lot of aggressive players behind me. Hopefully one of them will then raise. and then the guy that's under the gun is actually short, and his re-raise all in. If he has a hand, if I'm wrong and he has a hand, then I can re-raise, you know, and I can build a nice pot with aces pre-flop, kind of have a plan. Or say he had pocket, instead of ace-jack, he has deuces through nines. Okay, under the gun, limped. I'm afraid he might have a big hand, aces or kings. His image has been really tight. He's never limped under the gun. I'm going to limp with this hand, try to flop a set, see a flop cheap, and then try to stack him, you know, if he has aces or kings. He kind of has a plan. With the ace-jack, the pre-flop, Paul, you know, I'm not saying you have to have a plan every single time, but, you know, what's going to happen if someone re-raises it? You know, what are you going to do? You're probably going to throw it away, I would hope. What happens if you hit an ace on the flop? Wouldn't you be worried that the, you know, under-the-gun guy has aces, kings, queens, you know, ace-king, ace-queen, you know, something that has you in terrible shape?
Or any ace that also hits the board. I mean, the guy could have limped in under the gun with, you know, ace nine, and you know, or in this situation ace eight, or who knows what. And you think that you flopped him because you got a jack as a kicker, and meanwhile he's got some baby two pair.
Well, and the other thing that happens here, Paul, when you limp there, you're saying, okay, I'm willing to play this now four-way action. Well, the small blind called, so the big blind doesn't call. Big blind checks. Now you're playing against two random hands. They have no idea. If the flop comes jack high, they could have jack anything and have two pair, and you're in terrible shape. And you're putting yourself in a spot to make difficult decisions. I mean, now, as it turns out, it's pretty much a dream flop. I mean, you're going to go with the hand. The flop, you said, was jack-jack something.
Jack-jack eight, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to go with the hand of dream flop. But in general, playing the hand, when he asks, I think he said, how could he play it better, or what did he do wrong, or was he unlucky, or something like that. You know, the pre-flop play, you're setting yourself up likely to be in a difficult spot of having to make some difficult decisions with any type of flop. Any ace, you're not really sure where you are against the blinds, you're not really sure where you are against the under-the-gun limper. Any jack, you're afraid of an overpair, you're afraid of two-pair, you know, someone else could raise. I think the play would have been to either fold if you respected the under-the-gun limper. You know, if you respect him and think he's got a hand, you got to throw the ace-jack away and don't get involved. If you think the under-the-gun limper has been doing that a lot and you can move him off the hand, you don't really want to limp in general here, in my view, because you're not sitting with $100,000 and you're so deep, you can try to flop a Broadway straight or have a flop come, you know, fantastic, and you have enough chips where there's value. You know, it doesn't sound like they had real deep stacks, so I think the play would have been to fold or raise. And, you know, when you raise, you're going to shout out the blinds, and then you're going to get some information on what the guy under the gun does. You know, if he moves all in, you have to throw it away. And what you're hoping for by the raise is that everyone folds and you pick up the pot. But I think because of the under-the-gun limp with the chip stacks, I would probably recommend to fold right there, you know, or raise would be the second choice, but not to just call. From that on out, I think the person played the hand pretty good for sure and did get unlucky. You know, as the cards lie after the flop, I mean, the poor guy, I think he bet it, he said on the turn, and then someone made a bad call.
What happened was on the flop, he bets out 250, the small blind calls, so it's, now they're heads up, and he says, I plan on going all in after the turn. The turn brings a queen, and he shoved his stack for 1,050. That's what he had left. The small blind insta-called and showed 9-10. He had flopped the open-ended straight with two jacks and an eight. He had 8-9-10 jack-jack.
Oh, okay.
And so now he's got the queen high straight. The river brings a five of hearts, and he busts out.
Okay.
So the guy hit
a gut shot, but he was actually open-ended.
Yes.
Okay, so it wasn't a horrible call by the other player.
Is there anything he could have done to avoid taking this bad beat, or is this just one of those situations where, you know what, you got your money in and the cards beat you?
No, well, what he could have done is the pre-flop. And I think in general, for me, I can't tell you, Paul, how many times people have talked to me about hands. And, you know, I can relate it back to my golf days. You know, when someone sets up to the golf ball, if their alignment is 100 yards to the right, you know, either they're going to come hugely over the top and try to cut across the ball to get the ball back to the target, or they're going to hit it 100 yards to the right if they hit it where they're lined up. So the problem happened to the person before they even swung the club. It was something in their grip or something in their setup or the way they stood or the way they lined up. Something in the setup many times was the problem in a golf swing. In poker, many times what gets people in trouble is the preflop, when they decide to play a certain hand, or, you know, they don't raise or they don't protect their hand, something that happened earlier in the hand that could have prevented what they sometimes feel is a bad beat, many times, quite frankly, might be a little bit of bad play. Now, it's not a horrible play that this person made, that's for sure. You know, they limped in and saw the flop, and it was an awesome flop. So, yes, that is unlucky. But, you know, I think a lot of good players probably would have folded their preflop and never been involved, you know, or raised it, and then the 9-10 probably can't call with an upfront limper, and then you raise. It's going to be a pretty tough call of 9-10 because you got to be afraid the upfront limper, limp with a big hand, is going to re-raise. So you, if you call, you know, you might have thrown it away with the 9-10. So I don't think they could call.
But here's my question about the thinking going to the turn. He says, you know, I plan on shoving on the turn. I really wanted to do it on the flop, but I thought I could get a little bit more money out of the guy. When the flop comes jack-jack-8, and this guy bets out 250, when Mark, our listener, bets out $250, and the small blind calls, what does he think that the small blind has at that point that would allow him to call there? He's got to think about what the hand could possibly be. And he's got to say, well, you know, maybe he has a jack with a weaker kicker than my ace. Maybe he's got a pair of eights and he's trapping me, having flopped a full house. And I think one of the things you have to consider is maybe he has 9-10 and he's got a gut shot here. So that when the queen comes on the turn, you think to yourself, well, you know what, maybe that's a danger card for me. And maybe you don't think to yourself, I'm instantly going to put my entire stack in here. Now, I don't know what the alternate play is. The money's probably going to go in anyway, but you need to think about that. It's entirely possible that if he checks the queen, actually the small blind is going to act first there. So if the small blind checks the queen and then Mark checks behind him, at least now we're going to see, does the board pair on the river, in case we're worried about somebody having that open-ended straight and the queen giving him the nuts, or you know, where are we going to be? I think in some situations people are so excited about I flopped trips or I flopped a set that they don't really think, this guy called. What was he calling with, right?
Right. Well, the thing is, Paul, though, it's really hard to put him on a hand because you didn't get any information preflop because you didn't raise.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just out of the blinds. There's no two cards in the world someone like Durr is going to fold there. If you're playing against a good player, you think Durr is going to fold any two cards? Someone like him or Phil Ivey's going to fold? They're going to call to outplay you or to outflop you or to outplay you on the turn or the river or just to get lucky and, you know, have something good happen and have you make a mistake or just outplay you and bluff you if they sense weakness. So by not raising with the ace-jack, which I think they probably should have thrown away preflop, but not by not raising, you can't really put them on too much of a hand. You can because now you bet 250 and you said that the guy called. So now you can say, wait a minute, what is he calling with? Yes. But you don't. If he's got a jack, normally if you raise, you might say maybe he's got jack, queen, and now he made a full house. But you could be just as worried if a three comes because he could have any jack if he does. But you're not really worried about that because you're going to go with the hand because your flop's so big. But you just don't know what the guy has. That's really my point. You're putting yourself to a difficult decision. So
is that a situation where, okay, you've made the mistake of committing to the hand early on, but once you get to that turn, is there any way you're going to avoid getting the rest of your chips in there with only 1,050 left? You had 200 pre-flop with the four players at $50 apiece. You made it 250 on the flop, so now he called, so now you know you've got $700 in the pot. You only got $1,050 behind. Is there any way the money's not going in?
The problem, I think, is too, Paul. In tournaments, if it's kind of I can go back to a Phil Ivey hand when he folded the pocket jacks in the main event at the final table. You know, he only had 1 million and a quarter in the pot, and he had $15 million left, and he made a tight fold, which I thought was a good fold. He had a lot of chips behind. He wasn't super deep, but had a lot of chips behind. In this spot that we're talking about, and the person, I think you said at 1,300 or something, whatever was close to that, and the pot's starting to grow, and they have a huge, they flopped huge, it's tougher to fold. You know, if in that hand, going back to like Phil Ivey hand and the main event at the final table, if Phil only had $6 million, you know, he's going to call or move all in with the jacks, because you can't really wait around and be as patient. If the person that emailed in was sitting there with 10,000 in chips and now bet 250 and it's early stages of a tournament, you know, maybe they make a tight fold, you know, a big fold, because they're worried the other guy has a full house or worried that maybe they made a straight because the table's giving away chips and they feel that they're a good player at the table and they'll easily make back the small amount of chips they just lost. The problem is the pot's already pretty big now when the guy calls the 250 relative to what, you know, I think he started the hand with 1,300. He's got less than 1,000 left. The pot already has whatever the heck is in it, 700 or something, 600. It makes it a whole lot tougher. So, again, I just think the whole thing was compounded from the pre-flop play was, I think, the biggest mistake there. And then, you know, definitely got a little unlucky for sure after that.
And to go along with that, you know, people always talk about being pot committed. When you've got 1,300 and the blinds are 2,550, you might think to yourself, well, I still have 26 big blinds. I'm still going to be okay. Yeah, you're going to be okay, except for one thing. As soon as you get involved in a hand with your ace-jack, you're essentially putting your entire stack at risk. And if you ask most players in that situation, under the gun plus two with ace-jack, are you willing to commit your entire stack right here? Because if you are, then you might as well shove. I mean, you could shove and nobody's going to call you, and you're going to pick up a little bit of change here. But otherwise, you're going to play this thing out. You're going to get one caller. You might even get two callers on that flop. And now, again, you're risking your entire stack with ace-jack out of position.
Right, and with an upfront limper that you don't know about. So, yeah, again, I don't want to pick on the – I love the emails. I love the people email in, and I do like getting into it, and I'm sure there's other things. We could talk probably just about the turn play or, you know, just about after the flop.
Yeah.
But I really focused more on the pre-flop for this one. And I just like, you know, this is just some of the things that I would think about and to try to be helpful. I think you said it was Mark that emailed in, and I really appreciate the email. But, you know, that's probably what I would be thinking and what I think some of the better players would be thinking and probably how I would have played it.
Absolutely. And this is a classic case of learning from your mistakes. And this, as I mentioned at the top of this segment, we get more emails about ace-jack hands than anything else. But we love to get your emails regardless of what the hand is, and we'll try to analyze it, and we'll, you know, we're going to be brutally honest with you about how you played. By the way, none of this tells you that we would have done exactly the right thing in exactly the same circumstance, but we hope that we would, and we hope that by giving you some advice here,
you're right
you
about
can.
That, Paul. That's true. Yeah. Who knows? Maybe I would have learned too, you know. But when you have a little bit of time to think about it, it's easier. And it's always easier, Paul, you know, when you're not in the seat. When you're in the seat and you're playing the hand, it's tough. When you're at a table and you're watching stuff go down and you're watching two players play, it's a whole lot easier to put the guy on the hand or to see the train wreck coming. Oh, my goodness, this guy's going to bet into this guy, and he's got the nuts. Oh, he's going to re-raise all in. Boom, here it comes. And it happens. When you're in the hand, it's a lot tougher because you're managing your chips. You're thinking of different things. You're looking down. You're counting out your chips. You know, you're involved in it. It's a lot tougher when you're in the hand, and it's a whole lot easier when you have a little time to think and kind of go over it and dissect it like we're doing right now. It's a bit easier, and I still might probably make some mistakes on some of the things that I say. But like I said, I just hopefully can help them out a little bit, and I do think the main mistake was the pre-flop on how we played it.
I have never met the perfect poker player who makes absolutely no mistakes. And frankly, since I play a lot, I hope I never do. All right, this portion of the show is brought to you by the Poker Players Alliance, the group that fights for the rights of poker players like you and like me. You go to their website, theppa.org, and you will see a list of the achievements that they did on our behalf in 2009, from fighting for the delay of the UIGEA to fighting for the rights of home game poker players around the country, to fighting for each and every one of us who plays this game, whether you're online, offline, home games, or just reading poker books and wanting to know more about the game. The Poker Players Alliance is fighting for you in courthouses and legislatures and Capitol Hill as well. But they can't do it without your help. And for $20, you can become a member of the PPA like hundreds of thousands of other poker players have, and that money will go to a very good cause. The website, again, is theppa.org. Dennis will be back with more from the PokerStars Caribbean Adventure in the Bahamas next week, and Joe McGowan will join us next week as well. I'm Paul Harris. Our special thanks to the folks here at Harris St. Louis, the new home of the Final Table, where you can come and maybe make it to a Final Table of St. Louis's first World Series of Poker circuit event. It's coming up April 1st through 15th. The satellites begin on the 1st. The first tournament is on the 2nd. There'll be three tournaments a day, whether you're a no-limit hold'em player or an Omaha player or a horse player. Or there's all sorts of stuff for you. You can find the schedule for the circuit event by going to Harrah's website at harrahsstlouis.com. And then come down here and play live poker with us, or get online at pokerstars.net and play against Team PokerStars pros like Dennis Phillips. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading the podcast of the show, available on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. For now, this is The Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.